Welcome to another episode of the Choose Your Soul Show. We are your hosts. My name is Hakeem.
My name is Alyssa.
And we are passionate about providing perspective and resources to help you choose yourself and strengthen your soul. Every episode, we got a special guest to help you GYM, and that's Grow Your Mind. This week, we got Mr. Will Jackson. My brother from another. We both grew up in the south suburbs of Minneapolis, Minnesota, raised by single white moms, chasing a dream to the NFL. But shit happens, and that's what we're here to talk about today. Mr. Will, how you doing? How you feeling? Thanks for coming.
Oh, man, I am blessed. Thank you so much for having me on your show this morning. It's an honor to be here. I know you guys talk about content that is incredibly uplifting for the soul, and so to be a part of that, that's an amazing thing, man.
Hey, I hope you feel as good as you look, man. You know, me and Will go way back, man. A lot of experiences, and every time we chop it up, man, I learn something new about myself, about life, so I wanted to bring them all here to help us all gain perspective, because that's what we're about on this show. So you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're at now, you know, what you're passionate about, and let the people know.
Currently, I'm 34 years young. You know, I consider my main roles in life as a husband and father. I've recently took the route of education and gotten my licensing and everything to be a specialized educator. And my specialization within that field has been in social emotional learning, working with kids who have backgrounds in emotional behavior, disability, and being able to, you know, overcome their past and traumas is something that I take a lot of pride in, because I've got my own story, and I feel like your legacy is something that gets written over time. And I want young people to see a bright future and not be hindered by their past. So that's my work currently. I mentioned being a father and a husband. You know, I'm 9 years into the role of a father, 4 years in the role of a husband, and those have been incredibly enlightening, and I take them seriously. But like you mentioned, I play football. You know, my background is in athletics and going through the grind of trying to compete and impose my will on other men on the gridiron, you know. So my passion for coaching is still there, for sharing that ability to go out there and impose your will with young people. That's been fun, man. So that's what I've been up to these days.
We call that willpower, y'all. we both grew up as mixed kids in the south suburbs of Minneapolis, Minnesota. I was in Bloomington. He's about 15 minutes south of that, Apple Valley. How was your understanding of identity evolved since being the best athlete in your school, as far as I remember, and then being in that transition to helping others?
Interestingly enough, I think that did you know my story about how I was kind of going back and forth from California in my early years, like elementary?
I listened to that other podcast that you sent me, and I was like, okay, Damn, I didn't even know that when he used to be a roly-poly. Yeah.
My mom had decided to move out of California when I was probably in like second grade. My father had some issues with drugs and different things, and she felt like it was just a more appropriate place to be with her family in the Twin Cities. And so we made that switch, and that was really interesting. I was there for a few years and then, you know, played the game of I'm going to go be with my dad. And I think, interestingly enough, I know it was stressful and chaotic, but I learned a lot, because I think it's important to have balance from your parents, you know, being able to adopt both sides. But my mom definitely was probably the more about me, more in tune with me as a young person. So I got a lot of traits from her. And it was really interesting, because going from Oakland, California to the suburbs of Minnesota, I think I was ostracized quickly for a number of reasons. Early on in the educational world, I was the only black kid in my school. And I think as we got older, things started to, you know, there was a little bit more diversity within our schools in the, you know, 2005, 6, 7, 8 time. But in the midst of that, I think being a mixed kid, being light skin, but associating myself with the people of darker skin, but then not being accepted by them because of, you know, being white, having parts of my mom in me, and then going to the white kids and being too black for the white kids. It was really lonely, man. It was an interesting time. And I think that I feel blessed, because it was originally never part of the plan for me to get into sports. I think I did a little bit the youth. Then as I grew up, it was just like, dude, you're too damn big and too damn aggressive to not be playing football. Let's get you into football. But I was kind of soft. I ain't gonna lie. I was kind of soft early on. But then something clicked in me in that mentality. I think I started to see some of the things I was looking for. I think young men that grow up without a father seek validation. And so I was really looking for validation from almost anything. And I was doing it in probably a negative way. But thank God I got into sports and started to find, okay, this is where I can get the validation I'm looking for. and then really just bought in, became relentless in trying to pursue the development in that world of being the best football player. I wrestled, ran track, did everything to try to get to that next level. Ironically, because of external factors, I think I knew inside I liked the validation, but I didn't quite chase the dream for me at that point. You know, I think I'm 17, 16 years old, just trying to be the best because I liked how it felt and didn't really understand why I was doing it inside. And I think once I got to college, where it's a business, I mean, you know as well as I do, Keem, that it's a completely different environment as far as how it's approached. And the mentality of, what have you done for me lately? You know, what are you doing right now? Next man up, best man up. That comes with a lot of ego checking, and ego checking mixed with distraction really, it led me astray. And in that getting lost, I really found some of the darker truths about myself that needed to be answered. And a lot of hurt and a lot of pain, and hitting your head up against the wall can really ask you, well, why am I doing that? Why am I taking this approach? And that approach was really selfishness. And I think that going back to the question of like growing up single motherhood in Twin Cities, Minnesota, I think there was a little bit of, it was all about me inside. All I could think about was what William Jackson was getting. What was I getting from the world around me? And not necessarily like, as a man, I know we got to go get it, but I didn't quite understand that perspective of, okay, I need to impose my will on the world. I thought as long as I did something that made me look good, the world would come shower me in gifts. And I think it was a hard truth really looking at that and feeling the effects of lost potential, of lost opportunities, and just really kind of feeding that lower self and getting into a place where, damn, like depressive thoughts. You know, I'll be candid with you, Keem. I kind of keep some things in the dark, but there was a time and place where I wasn't sure if this world was for me. You know, ironically, some of the things that happened in my life that really pushed me into the role of, it's not for you anymore. You know, becoming a father, realizing that it was time for me to make sacrifice was the thing that was going to just have to happen. And it was profound. So I hope I answered your question. I think I went off on a little bit of tangent, but I tried to tell a story that related to what it was like growing up and how that affected me. Single motherhood is tough, man. The women that are out there doing it, I salute you. I highly recommend you use your village, because it takes a village to raise a young man. And, you know, don't feel like you're doing it all alone, young ladies, because the community does, it cares.
No, you definitely answered, man. That's, you know, a lot of athletes go through that transition of losing their identity when you put all your focus on sports. I did. I lost it. I went in my dark place and I had to pull myself out. And now what came from that was helping others, identifying and accepting adversity, and then identifying the opportunities to help others grow and heal themselves. And that's the beautiful part about the dark place. But, you know, we all got to get to that trigger point where we're done dealing with our own shit. Because ain't nobody coming for you unless you choose yourself.
You get fed up, man. You get fed up with that victim mentality. You know, one thing I like to do in my practice as a teacher, when class starts, I always start with a question of the day, and sometimes I'll let them pick it. But yesterday I asked a question, and it was a leading question. I knew that, you know, the question had a right answer. I asked the kids, if you could be anything in the world, would you rather be a victor or a victim? Hmm. Some of the kids were kind of confused by the question, but once they understood it, they knew, like, yo, I want to win. You know, I want to be a victor. I'm victorious. And even some of the people in the class were kind of like, I'm a victim. And people like, no, you don't want that. And so kind of the groupthink took influence. But then once everyone said that I'm a victor, I want to be a victorious person, I followed it up with how many of you have felt like a victim in your life, in your past, and been hurt and been done wrong or something that has taken from you? And everybody put their hands up. And I kind of just equated, yo, if you're still here right now after going through what you've been through, no matter what it was, you're winning, bro. And the hardest thing in life is to show up every day trying to put your best suit and tie on, you know, metaphorically speaking, for your best self and thrive. And so the kids really, like, I could feel that they could not kind of had a change in perspective of, like, damn, you know, I do choose this. I do choose that. So going through that grind, man, it makes us great. I think it does. And if it don't kill you, it only makes you stronger.
It's almost like you were meant to be on that path, because it sounds like you did a lot of inner work and realized a lot of things about yourself in your childhood and things you had to overcome that obviously led you to the point you're at now where you can help kids. What age do you teach right now?
So ironically, I consult, that my age group is from probably 6 to 12th grade. My previous experience was really working with juniors and seniors and trying to prepare them for college, even though most of them weren't really ready for college. That taught me a lot about the system of public education and how it's this factory that feeds into a financial benefit for colleges, and there's kickbacks. And I'll take you down the rabbit hole some other time. But essentially, I was trying to get people who were juniors and seniors in high school who have previously had terrible experiences with education, not considered kids at the top of their class, but how do they get into a place where they feel like they can go get it? You know, and I think for, you know, people like myself, people like you, Keem, we kind of knew our path was football and we were going to take it there. And that was going to kind of open the door for other opportunities. But for some of these kids, there's a great unknown after that. Those high school doors push them out. And so I felt like it was a really good opportunity for me to get into how people pursue their purpose and how people pursue their passion, because it ain't college. I know that if you're not ready to go seek the academic mind and have interest in higher research and higher learning, going to college will have you broke and stressed out and making bad decisions real fast. I agree, Alyssa. I think that like God really did put me in an interesting place to have some powerful, everlasting impact on our future. So I'm just trying to put, you know, the Most High first and embody love and empathy and grace and hopefully make a difference.
The Most High within. And I know one thing for sure. If it wasn't for football, I wouldn't have no damn college degree.
Same, bro. Same.
Yeah, it is interesting how you said that schools go after the money. And like, I remember I was in sports up until like ninth grade. I was in track and basketball and softball, and I wasn't one of the rich kids of my town or whatever. So the coaches would overlook me, even though I remember I would do really well, but they would just be like putting in, you know, the rich kids of the school or whatever. So I got pissed. And I'm like, fuck all of you. I'm not being in sports anymore. And then I started drinking in high school. So I'm like, I'm not going to go to practice anymore because you guys suck. I'm busting my ass and you don't even give me any credit. And I needed acknowledgement, which I realized way later. I'm like, I wasn't getting any acknowledgement. And so that really put me in a place where I was like, fuck you guys. Like, I don't care about this if you don't care about me. So it's interesting that you say that. And then the kids that don't have promising futures with sports kind of can go off into a crazy route of their lives. But how old are you when you did get into football?
I'd probably say when I actually started playing consistently, or like multiple years in a row without like a gap, because I think I played in like third grade, second grade, but then I didn't play until like seventh grade. And so I'd probably say seventh grade is when I started playing football. But truth be told, I was a better wrestler than I was a football player. I think I was just an athlete. And so developing in football was like, that was my passion. I love getting better because I wasn't very good. I just had some potential, but I put the work in. And you know what? You bring up a really good point, because the politics of athletics and sports, It almost forces a lot of people out because of that bad taste.
Piss me off.
What do they call them? The parent clubs or the associations?
Booster clubs or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're so political and they have such an influence in coaches' ears that, like, I feel bad that kids got to go through that, because a lot of good kids get turned off from a sport they love because of that. So I'm sorry that happened to you.
Yeah, I didn't have to deal with that. I was always the best. The booster club. The booster club always picked me up wherever I was, right before the game. Like, oh, we're coming to get you. You can come over for dinner, come on, sleep over. I know no one's at your house, but we need you tomorrow in center field. I was like, damn, that's kind of fucked up too. You only picked me up because I was good at the sport, but I couldn't in the off season.
Straight up. That's kind of a heavy point to realize. And I think it goes to the question you asked me earlier about like the influence of the community. And like, I felt like my mom was kind of ostracized from me in the midst of the community being like, oh, we love your son. We love your son. We're parties here, parties there. Come meet us, come be with us. But my mom was always like, when she would show up, they'd feel like, oh, what are you doing here? Your son's the good athlete. We don't want to hang out with him. We don't want him. You know, yeah, that's kind of bogus, because a lot of the acceptance that we got was because we were doing something good for them. You know, we were helping sell tickets and make the team win the game, and everybody was happy, you know. But if we weren't providing that, they wouldn't give two about us, you know.
Hell no. Most athletes, such as myself and you, go through an identity crisis after falling short of the sports dreams, like we did. Did you experience a time lapse of confusion? How did that experience help you rein your priorities? And what was it like in that lapse between losing your vision and your faith in what you were going to do, you know, after college, like, I'm going to the NFL. And then when you realize, no, I'm not, what happened?
Well, you know what the irony is? I was thinking about that the other day. And had I maybe had some higher goals set for myself, like the NFL, I would have been closer to achieving it. I have a story about a friend. He actually played several years in the NFL. His name's LJ Fort. And I used to be like almost off put by his blind optimism of I'm going to the NFL. Like, I don't care what you say. I don't care what it is. Like, I know I'm going to the NFL and I'm going to do everything in that power. And I used to think like, Brad, come on, man. And you don't know, but he did it. He's a veteran. You know, I think that like just setting the tone in your mind and having unwavering faith, not even letting your subconscious creep in, because it used to be wild, man. I honestly, looking back, I applaud the way that he imposed his will on the world in that matter. And I think for me, the dark thing that I went through is in realizing I was never even, I think once I got the Division I scholarship, for me, I was like, I made it. Mama, we made it. That was it. I'm in college. I got the full ride. I'm here, you know? And I think the worst part for me was not truly having the vision of a dream. You know, I know you know about the dream, Kane. You have to keep that dream alive, man. It's a picture painted in your mind to see, to achieve. I didn't really have the picture in my mind. And truly, I think I would liken myself to somewhat of like a plastic bag, just kind of floating through the wind, floating through the days, not really driving nothing, but just going wherever the wind took me. And I think that that led to, I'd call that whole time period confusion and a lapse of clarity and what I wanted to do. And in the midst of that, and I like to speak in metaphors. I know it sounds like I'm speaking theologically, but I speak in metaphors of I opened the door for a lot of demons to come into my life at that point. I opened the door for a lot of bad behaviors, bad habits, even things that have like kind of festered up inside of me to really come out and come to a head. And I think that we kind of discussed earlier, you just get sick of yourself. You get sick of how your relationships are going. You get sick of how you feel about yourself. You get sick of what you got going on. And I think at some point, I just decided to not be the plastic bag anymore. I decided to start driving my life. And ironically, it took some years. I think I ended college in 2014. My son was born in 2024. And I think so there was a 10-year period of I was kind of going through motions, trying to figure out what was what and do things. I'm sorry, 2014. My son was born later 2014. And now it's 2024, right. 10 years later. And I see the results of having my son affect me and realizing, bro, if I don't figure it out, if I don't stop living like a plastic bag, what's going to happen to my son? Is my son going to lack vision? Is my son going to lack direction? Is he not going to have proper manhood motivated? Because when I think of what being a man is, I know that society's got all these different things. And I know that a woman can do this as well. Like you, that doesn't just apply to men, but there's something about a man's role, in my opinion, in society. And if you paint the picture in your head and you go put it in the material world, you move the needle forward. That's the process of being a man. You take your vision, whether it's for your family, for your people, your community, your nation, and you make it happen. That's what men do, you know, and no matter how brutal it looks, it's getting done. And I think the beauty of the collaboration between divine masculine and divine feminine is the man is kind of like the head of the spear moving through, and the woman is like the vine that's like leaving all the grace and beauty behind it as the man paves the way. And so that perfect harmony and union is a crucial thing. And I was missing that. I was looking for love in different avenues and trying to find relationships to complete me and validate me more. But I think it was really, again, hitting my head up against the wall, failing over and over again, coming to a fruition of what the hell's happening. And I think I really need to just look deep inside and find the highest form of love inside of me, inside of consciousness, and just commit myself to that. And commit myself to what I would say, hallowing out a place in my heart where the most divine love and nature can abide and just move through me in that element. And it just woke me up. Piece by piece, I became more aware of my own bullshit and how it was affecting me negatively. By the time my son was three, it was like, okay, I'm awake. I see what time it is. Obviously, you know, we're not perfect. We're going to fall short. But the plan and the vision became more real. I think Hakeem knows this about me, but Alyssa, you don't really know this about me. I've always been someone who's been against the system. And it took me years to figure out, okay, it's not about trying to beat the system, because the system is always going to grind you down. And not necessarily beat the system, but destroy the system. No one's going to destroy the system of society, whether it's money, all these different things, healthcare, food. But you have to learn how to play the game and win. And I started to wake up to that, to how to play the game and win. Because I think a lot of what killed my drive as a young man was feeling like, I can't beat the system. The system's going to grind me down and destroy it. But I think as I matured, you learn that, okay, you can play a role and manipulate the game of your life and find freedom and be able to find healthy food, make good relationships, not be grinded down by your boss, and find true peace.
Similar, man. I mean, I believe everything you said. That's beautiful how you said it. I ain't had no kids, so I didn't have like a turning point, but I was more like your boy, LJ4. I was keeping the motherfucking dream. I'm going to the NFL. Since you met me, I didn't care what anybody said. I went D1, ran, went D2, caught a felony, got kicked out, dropped out for a year, went back D3, had 4 knee surgeries, still played, got All-American, graduated, still thought I was going to the NFL somehow. I didn't even have a backup plan. I was like, I don't care how many schools I got to go to, I'm going to make it to the league. I'm going to be that one story. There was a fucking, Austin Miles or something from the Cowboys. He was D3.
That
was
my idol. Yeah.
I'm like, oh shit, he did it. I'm going for sure. And eventually broke my damn ankle. And that was my turning point when I broke my ankle. But the kids, I didn't have no kids because my pullout game strong and I'm pro-choice. Okay. Somebody was like, oh, what? You're going to kill a baby? I'm like, well, if you knew me back then, having the baby, my baby might have killed your baby because I wouldn't have been around. So if you asked me if I was thinking about murder while I was in the pussy, I was only thinking about murdering the pussy. Okay. But I was not thinking about coming in the pussy. But then eventually I broke my ankle and I had to sit in that fucking jail cell. And that was my turning point. Yours was your kid. And I had to sit in that jail cell for 8 days. By myself, going through withdrawals, no pen, no pad, no shower, no fucking phone call, no nothing. And I had to sit there and find who the fuck is going to come get you. Nobody. You got to choose yourself. And I say in the choose yourself process, there's a trigger point. You know, you either got your doctor who tells you you about to fucking die, or, you know, you're losing your health or your liver collapse, or you got loss of health, freedom, family, relationships, money. You got inspiration, which would be like your son. Or going to a retreat, or freaking getting too high on shrooms one day. Or you got an experience where you have to actually go into a dark place where you burn all your bridges and you're just alone. And I think those are the turning point for most people if you don't have the guidance. Some people have like, oh, great parents, private school, and like you'll never have to go through a dark place and then you're cool for your whole life, which is, you know, rare, but it does happen. And
also boring. Boring.
Yeah. And that system, man, I was on probation for 11 years. I probably failed UAs like 8-9 times, man. I was trying to fucking smoke weed, drink something, fake piss, do something, do this. I could smoke. I could drink on Thursday. I don't got to drop till Monday. That's 80 hours. How am I? What the hell?
That had to be stressful, dog.
They was like, what the fuck are you doing? We can see you. We see it in your piss, man. Go back to jail. And eventually, yeah, with the broken ankle and sitting in there, it was like, okay, I can't play sports and I can't cheat the system. You better figure it out. You better figure out what you're going to do for yourself. Eventually, I joined my uncle in the liquor sales company. So then I just dedicated to personal development sales. That's really what got me into personal development because I wanted to sell a lot of liquor and I wanted to see how I could contribute my traits of athleticism and my mindset to my communication and sell more cases. But that got me more attached to contribution and investing into myself and sleep and gym and my physique and how I carry myself and what you have to sell your brand. You have to sell yourself every day. Every relationship you're going to, your wife, your first date, your last date, your mama, everybody, you got to sell yourself all day, every day when you leave your house. And so that personal development is key to really any aspect of life, man. So y'all better invest into yourself, time, energy, and money, for real.
Well, I love what you said about the psychology of, well, I'm bringing the psychology in it, but when you talk about those heavy experiences, it's typically the trigger point is what you actually called it.
Mm-hmm.
And that trigger point is typically something profound that leads to heavy emotional experiences. And I can't explain what it's like for everybody, but it's almost like it's a force inside of your heart that like, it's either scary, it's exciting, it's big enough. You know, how are you familiar with neurology? And when there's like when your neurons finally fire and they send the signal, it's like you finally hit that threshold, or when a volcano is about to erupt, it hits that one point where boom, you see the change. And I think that's one of the most powerful things that could happen to a person is that moment of like, it's so heavy, it's so hard, it's so big that the only it forces this new person to just come out of a cocoon, whether it's like an egg breaking out of a shell or a chicken breaking out of its eggshell or a butterfly breaking out of its cocoon. There's this big force that happens, and I think that
dick busting open a condom.
Bringing new life.
New life, baby. No, yeah, that's
so, you got to cool go through it. Your story. I didn't really know it was like that, man, but that's real, bro. Like waking up in a jail cell every day, I'll have you like, damn, how'd I get here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To go through something.
That know? Shit wasn't yeah. no sleeping in there.
And I think that you, speaking of, you know, having the vision and the friend that went to the NFL, I think if anyone's listening, obviously, Will, you were like putting your doubt on him because you didn't believe in yourself enough to get there. And so if you're listening to this, don't let anyone around you put doubt in you, because if you have the vision, that's like what it means to fake it till you make it, or being Delulu, having the delusional belief in yourself, because you will get there if you have the vision in your head, because it's like you're putting material matter into the energy of the vision that you have, and it will come to fruition if you just hold fast and stick to it. But for you, Keem, I know you believed in yourself to get there eventually too, but I think your path was just different, and so you kept getting these lessons, like this is not your path. Even though you believed in yourself to get there, you had something greater. Not to say it's greater, because obviously NFL players are amazing, and having the discipline and the tenacity to be a football player takes a lot, but you are going to touch a lot more people with the work that you're doing now, so it like sends you on this direction to be doing something that you were meant to do, as opposed to what you thought you were supposed to do. So it's like the universe or God, source, energy, whatever, will put you on the path that you need to be, no matter how hard it may seem during the things that you had to go through, going to jail, breaking your limbs here and there and all that stuff. It's like you're supposed to get to the point you're at now to be able to connect and lead people and trigger people in the way that you do. So it's like, you know, you're going to end up where you're supposed to be no matter what. And I did want to go back to what you said about the feminine and the masculine, and having a male figure in the household, if you have children, is so powerful, because like you said, I mean, women can do it all, and we do it all. And a lot of the time there are a lot of single mothers in the household, but it is powerful to have some sort of male figure because I have a son, he's 7. His dad and I, we have a good relationship, and I'm glad that he's been around his entire life, because it is important to have that male figure in a child's life, especially as a male. So
true that.
Well, and props to you for fostering a positive relationship there, because I think a lot of mothers, they kind of push fathers away from their children. Mm-hmm. I mean, Keem kind of said it early, how he himself and his younger youth wouldn't have been around. Mm-hmm. And so just imagine if as a mother, you're making it harder by causing problems. So props to you for having, you know, the peace of mind to know the value of that. Because I think sometimes, at least in my experience in the schools, there's a lot of mothers doing it by themselves, and it's hard. Life is stressful enough. I think, you know, I love being a husband because I love taking care of my baby girl. She runs a business, she's a lawyer, but she's still my baby girl. Mm-hmm. You know, and I want to make sure she feels like she can turn her brain off and just be this vulnerable woman to really embody some of these powerful feminine forces. And I know that that's hard to do by yourself. And mm-hmm. so to really unlock some of the highest level of these things, you have to have support. Going back to this, like, that's a high, deep respects for you working that out, even though it didn't quite work the way it might have been imagined originally. But to still be friends, to still foster relationship, the child just seeing that adds so much more validity to their being that I can't express. I don't know about you, Keem, but did you ever in your life see your mother and your father like hug or just be kind or friendly to each other?
Hell no. They fought in the first sentence, yo. The first sentence. Like, I think the oldest memory I have of my dad was second grade. He came in out of nowhere. He's probably high as fuck playing the bongo drums. He's a drummer. He's been a drummer. So like playing the bongo drums for my second grade class. And then he just left. He was supposed to take me home that day, but he just left. So I got on the bus. And then the next one was, I got into this altercation. I grabbed a hockey stick out of a freaking at gym class. And there's this black girl who kicked me in my nuts once. And she was always being dramatic, flirting with me. Her name's Whitney. I could not stand her ratchet ass, always snapping her neck and her fingers and fucking. Oh, she was so annoying. But she had these huge Spice Girl heels and she kicked me in my nuts. And that was the worst I've ever been kicked in my nuts ever in my life. I was like throwing up and shit in like fourth grade. And I went. There's a gym class and I played hockey at this time and we were playing floor hockey and there was only one really good stick and I was the best one. So I get the good stick. It only makes sense. Why is anybody else grabbing the stick? Watch out.
Well, if you're the best one, you could survive with the worst stick.
Right. Give your team better access. You know, was she you on your team? Like, if she was on your team, then
you sound like Whitney, who don't play hockey. So either way, I ran to the gym doors open. I ran to the damn thing, trying to get some extra swings in because I had practice that night. So I need the good stick because I actually play, y'all. I grabbed the stick. She grabbed my stick. And I yanked it and she fucking flailed on the ground. So god dang dramatic. Crying, fucking the glasses and shit. The teacher walked in, didn't see what happened. Was like, hit me with that stick and all this shit. I was like, oh my god, bitch. So I got suspended, went home. My dad came in high as fuck. I don't know if he was high, but he wasn't sober until 14 years ago. So it sounds like he was high. And he picked me up by my neck, put me up on the wall. My mom's like hanging on his fucking arm. You want to hit people weaker than you? We don't hit weak people. We stand up to bullies. Brought me down to the park and tried to get my ass whooped by some high schoolers. My mom's like, Gregory, stop. Chasing down. It's fucking noon on a Saturday. I'm crying. He got me by my shirt. He's like, come on. He's big as fuck. My mom's like, Gregory, stop. And that was the dynamic of my fucking parents. Is my dad would be so over-disciplined and my mom would always never discipline me. So whenever my dad came, I always respected what he said and I never respected what my mom said. And it was always like that. And so eventually, when I grew up, that's how I thought that you get respect, because that's how my dad got respect for me, was to be that force. So then I was, you know, me always talking shit, always talking down to people, always, you know, being cocky and all that. And not knowing I was being cocky, it was just a belief I had to have in myself as a defense mechanism. But I was really hurting from a lack of a fatherhood, a lack of guidance, a lack of explanation about why I respected him. And it was because, you know, he wasn't there. So one, the rarity of him being there was like, oh, he's here. God, dad, yes. You know, he wasn't there enough. But then when he came in with the force as well, it was like, damn, them men have to be powerful. They have to be freaking in your face. Now you can't cry. You can't fucking show fear. You can't. But I never hit no one smarter than me after that shit. And I never hit a woman, for the record, y'all. And I didn't even hit her with that damn stick.
You know, you bring up a good point, because when you're experienced, like as a young person, you're only aware of so much, right? So when things are happening to you from these people who you idolize, you're viewing it from the, you were what, say you said second grade is when that story happened.
That was probably
from a second grade perspective.
Yeah.
And you don't understand. And then him not being there consistently just left so much more like gray area for you to fill in your own gaps. But imagine if you would have been there to like teach you why he was doing this and the purpose that it served. Is I'm being emotional about this right now because of here's what my thoughts and my feelings are. And that could have given you a certain perspective to maybe eliminate some of the unfiltered parts of that, right? Maybe you would have been less willing to fight and beat somebody up for being not disrespectful, but you know what you were alluding to, like I'm cocky, I'm talking shit because you ain't gonna act like this without catching these paws
every time.
Man, you ain't gonna act reckless around me and not, you know, respect me without getting snatched up. And that's because some of the experiences with your father led you to feel that that's what you had to do, because there wasn't the proper picture painted. And he probably wasn't in his best mind if you say he was addicted to drugs and things like that. And I can relate to that, man. Father's trying to father without being in the right mindset. And that's why I, as a father, I'm so adamant about being there consistently. I have conversations with my 9-year-old that people are like, bro, you know, he's only 9, right? I'm like, I don't care. He heard it. He understands where I'm thinking and why the process. It'll click one day, you know, and at some point, the more he hears it, even though it might be above his head, he's going to be 28 years old. I might not even be here. He'd be like, damn, that's what my dad meant. Mm-hmm. And it'd be that golden nugget that changes his life. So ladies out there, don't give your baby daddy stress. Just do whatever you can to keep him in your life. I ain't saying you got to bring him back into your bedroom, but just let him
got to suck his dick.
Him showing up is appreciated.
Makes a difference for sure.
That's why I want to go around and do motivational speaking to schools. Now I'm working with my agent for that, because we all have that one time where we heard one thing from one person and changed our life forever. Just one thing. And that's something and it might not click until later.
Right.
And you subconsciously program, especially as a freaking young jit, man.
Well, what's up? I'm doing guest speakers in my SEL class, bro. I'd love to have you.
Let's get it, man. Let's get it, man. I'm ready. 2025 Choose Yourself Tour.
Okay. Okay.
For real. Yeah. It's going down.
I'm excited for you. Oh my gosh. Everyone stay tuned for Keem's extravaganzas. You were talking about, obviously, I've experienced this too. When you become a parent, it's like you have a profound awakening. How did this challenge and deepen your sense of purpose and lead you to understanding the spirituality of manhood, which we kind of talked about, but you can go a little bit deeper.
The one particularly related to my son had a lot to do with sometimes choosing yourself is lifting up others in a more sacrificial way. And I've listened to some of your points, and I know you got to fill your own cup up to an absolute degree. If you're coming from empty, it's hard to really put out anything productive and beautiful. But for me, I think that I had spent my whole life so taken care of and so spoiled. I won't say so spoiled. I think I went through enough things to unspoil me. But I think my mother really wanted to show me love because I think she had her own issues with feeling loved and didn't have memories of like being hugged by her father. So she wanted to overshower me with love. And I think for me, I want to overshower my child with, you can do it. You can get it. You can do this. And I guess the point that I'm trying to make there is that I had to learn that he's owed something from me. I made him. I would be a terrible person not to feel like I have an obligation to build him up to be prepared for life. And in doing that, I think, you know, sometimes you might not have much to give, but it's got to be given because that's what true love is. I you notice my tone when I say true love is sacrifice. I don't know if I believe that necessarily, but I think any mother especially can tell you that the highest form of love she can give is putting her child first and taking care of her child, feeding her child before herself, you know, giving of her body to give life to her child. And that, to me, that's a divine feminine, a mm-hmm. divine feminine trait of being able to sacrifice. And I think that that's the one spiritual lesson I learned in becoming a father, is that you can't put yourself first always. You can't necessarily think that life is going to always take care of you and you must demand that or go get it in certain ways. I think having my son led me to understand that putting other people, lifting them up, it's a really powerful form of leadership. It's that servant leadership. Mm-hmm. I think there's a proper term for that. I don't know if you can tell me off the top of your head what it is, but being a leader that serves is a wonderful form of leadership as you develop and grow skills around that. Spiritually speaking, I see the rewards of it every day. I see that sometimes there are days that are character building. And just like when we work out in the gym, we empty everything we got in the muscles and try to find some more. I think that happens in our brain and psychology of when we're at work, we're cleaning the house, we're doing all these things, but now I got to entertain or teach or read or not just go zone out and watch the basketball or football game. I got to prosper this young life and teach it symbols of phonics and all these different things to be a good being with all the potential. So that I would say sacrifice has been the thing.
You go back to primitive thinking. How you going to feed your kids if you ain't got no nutrients in your body? You talking about how long can you put your kids first? And now your kids ain't got shit. We're talking about sustainability. You can lead by serving others, but that's not a gift, doing what other people want. And I know you can fill up your cup by feeling valued by others because you're doing things for them to help them grow. But there's another form you can fill up your cup by exemplifying what you want them to be, by showing them what you want them to do, the actions they want to take, and showing them the results. Like, yo, this is how I got fit, smart, wise. Instead of, you know, let me sacrifice my time in the gym, my sleep, my nutrition to try to give it all here and tell you to do this, do this, do this. I'm not doing it. I'm sacrificing for you, but you should not sacrifice. You should choose yourself. I won't do it. I'm going to choose you, but you also choose you. Don't choose others like I'm doing. It can get confusing, you know, especially as a kid.
It's a good point.
You got overweight trainers and doctors and preachers trying to tell people what to do. I don't want to fucking hear it.
Right.
You don't even believe in yourself.
Yeah.
I think it's balance.
Yes,
I think that exactly. There's some huge pieces to, in the midst of being this servant leader, it can also validate you in these not so healthy ways. So even though you feel like you're doing the right thing, like you could be just feeding this sense of ego and like, oh, well, I'm taking care of everybody. So it's right. So empty. Having the right mindset is key. And I think the other side of it is we see fathers that are like, shit, his mama got him. I'm good. I'm going to go do this. And I think sometimes the sacrifice is, okay, I would love to go to the gym at 5 a.m. this morning, but I know I'm going to have my son, so I'm going to move the time so he can be at the gym with me, so we're here together. It's some of the examples I'm thinking of that they apply, but they kind of give a different sense of you from what you just said of what sense does it make to sacrifice. But one day came, and I don't want to make you feel like I'm saying something against you here, but when you have a child, you will understand that there is this helpless life that has nothing without you. And so no matter what, like part of the grind is you got to get the nutrients inside of you so you can continue to do that, which lifts you up because it makes you fight that much harder. You know, I think sometimes for ourselves, it's going to be like, well, I can go without that. Like, I'm good. I might be able to not choose myself in this moment because I can just, I've chosen myself all week long. I'm good. I'm doing the right thing. But when you have a kid, bro, and that kid has a need, there's something in the dog comes out of you where you're like, I just got to get it done. And it miraculously, you have the energy and the cognitive ability to do what needs to be done. And it's spiritual, bro. It's almost downloaded from a higher programming of how important keeping that life alive is.
Know your capacity. You got to have a level of emotional awareness too. So you know when your back about to give out, your heart about to stop. And whether it's a kid or whatever it is, you can always filter your senses. There's people like, oh, I can't go to the gym. I got to take care of my kid. Then you eat bullshit, smoking cigarettes, eating sugar. What? All day, you cannot do that. And now you're talking about sacrifices. So you really sacrificing the gym and sleep and then eating bullshit. So what are you doing though? What are you really, are you sacrificing or are you risking your life because you can't control your addictions and you can't embrace your natural state and be your best? Those are things you can do all day, every day. You don't have to watch bullshit. You don't have to listen to bullshit. You don't have to eat bullshit all day, every day. And that'll help you stay at your optimal performance without the gym, without sleep, without spending money on yourself and spending money on your kids. There's consumption components that you can really focus on to be your best and really filter your sense, especially in this day and age. But you know, you're right. I ain't got no kids and that's intentional, but I got a lot of people looking up to me, including my mama.
Well, what you said comes with a higher sense of awareness too, because I think that it's easy as you're making these sacrifices to continue to make further self-detrimental sacrifices, right?
Yeah.
You change your plans and now that, okay, well, I'm not getting my workout in and now I'm going to eat some bullshit and go into bad habits. And that's an easy thing to do. Alyssa, I know that you probably know taking care of kids is tiring and it's easy to fall into those bad habits. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Keem, you're right, bro. I think that you have to be incredibly mindful of how you're filtering your senses and how you're managing what you can do. But the one point I think that me and Alyssa are making is that once you have a kid, bro, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, there's more in my tank than I even realized, you know, and there just has to be. And it comes from somewhere else that you didn't realize. So knowing what you got, sometimes you'll be surprised when there's more on the line and it really, really matters. And it's life or death.
For anybody who don't have kids, set the foundation, strengthen your mind before you start coming in, girls.
Agreed.
Yeah, I will say I make it to the gym. I've definitely made choices for Sebastian that I'm maybe that were better for him than for me, right? And so I'm like, okay, I have to do this because of him, because I need him to be the happiest kid that he can be, even if it maybe doesn't make me the happiest. But when it comes to like pouring into myself and going to the gym and doing my little, having my little morning routine and my meditation and my alone time, especially my alone time. Like he knows sometimes I'm like, just don't come in my room for like 30 minutes, please. Can you, at this age, it's a little bit easier because he's can function by himself on the living room and whatnot. But when they're babies, like there's none of that. So it's like, you have to understand there is seasons with parenthood too. It's like for a little while when they're newborns up until maybe like 3-4 years old, probably four, it's like, I don't know. Probably not going to be able to do as much as you're used to. Unless you do have the family dynamic with both parents in the household, then it's easier. You can trade off. And it's just, you know, when it comes, you're going to realize, like, you're going to see what you have time for and what you don't. But it becomes different for sure.
Yep. Everybody's priorities are different. And when you get a newborn, obviously, but you can do self-work in a 6x9. Trust me. I know. Sure. You can do self-work. You can do meditation, breath work, journaling, and exercise in literally 20 minutes. You can do that. I don't want to hear it. You can't
That's
find
what
a way.
To realize, bro, that consistent, just like Alyssa said, having that check, time check, to check, take check. Care of it, you got to get your boxes done. You got to. You got to check them off and take care of yourself. Grow your mind.
There's always going to be people who want to blame external factors, including their fucking family. People are always going to do that. But we talk about being a lone spirit on this planet. You know,
well, that sounds like the victim mentality. If they want to be a victim, you can choose that life. But if you want to take accountability and ownership of your life, because it's yours, you're going to start to make those subtle changes. And I can't wait to have kids. So many people get your message.
No, I can wait.
Your message is consistent.
No, I appreciate that. You know, it comes down to really the time before and after your sleep. That's all I'm saying. And mindful consumption.
You have a newborn crying for 4 hours from like midnight to 4 a.m. It's like,
there ain't no sleep.
Temporary sacrifice. I hope you did the work before you had a kid.
For real.
Otherwise, now you done shot yourself in the foot. Now you're here complaining.
Well, I mean, we hear horror stories, right? Some parents fail, whether you're a father that goes to get milk and never comes back because you're too stressed out, you didn't take care of yourself, you're not resilient in the mind.
Or your
mother that like it makes terrible decisions. I mean, some we've heard horror stories in the news of mothers just like forgetting about babies in the bathtub.
Damn. You know? In the car and shit, man. You know, went and gambled in the 100-degree heat. Shit. Speaking of mothers, raised by a single white mother. Me too. And in a unique cultural dynamic, must have tested your mental and emotional strength. How did you tap into your inner power during challenging times? And how has that influenced your spiritual path? I guess with this question I'm asking, how is, you know, being raised by a single white mother as a black man impacted or influenced your spiritual path, or has it at all?
The way I relate to that question and combine it with spiritual perspective, I learned a lot of like bad things in the sense of not accepting myself, feeling like I was ostracized by my mom's family for being like, not for being black necessarily, but just the culture that I was from Oakland, California, bro. I thought I was hood rich. I thought I was rocking FUBU, baggy jeans.
Ghetto fabulous.
I was ghetto fabulous, baby. I was ghetto fabulous. And when I got here, it was like, that's not the way to live. That's not acceptable. So there was a lot of elements of like, I began to shun myself. And I began to like not accept myself, and that really, really hurt. As I got older, I think that what I learned, that what I truly was, I mean, yes, I'm this, you know, now I'm a beautiful black man, but
facts.
At some point, I didn't know who the hell I was inside, you know? And so I think that the spiritual element came from the knowledge of, you don't have to attach yourself onto these material elements of yourself. There's something deeper inside of you that is non-material, that is where you should lie some of your foundational virtues are at. Mm-hmm. And so I hope my mom doesn't kill me for saying this. My mother had me when she was 16 years old, bro. She had no clue. She would like grew up in the foster system too, in some elements of her life. So she was a very like young-minded woman. And I think that most women can attest, like when you have your first child, you kind of get frozen in time in that period, because you go into this phase of like you're trying to take care of your child and you're isolated and there's not a whole lot of development happening. Mixed with trauma, my mom had some really hard experiences growing up, as you know, in her life, and that affected her and how she was able to raise me. And I think I saw a lot of that questioning self-worth, dealing with some hard moments that happened, and didn't understand it. I think young age, I was even like cold to my mom, like disrespectful, like didn't value her experience. Right. And that was probably, I cringe now thinking about the, how that all went, because I know that my mom only had me, I'm her only child, and how important I was to her, but how cold and disrespectful I was. That had devastating for her. And I learned, like, I think she cut me off for like a year. I didn't talk to her in my freshman year of college. And that was probably one of the roughest years of my life, you know, going through it, not really having, I was just an asshole and I had to learn the hard way. And so I think coming back to my mom in the midst of that and accepting her for who she was helped me accept myself for who I was. And then later turned out to be more spiritually enlightening, because as soon as you get that first foundational step of accept who you are, you can begin to deal with some of the deeper bullshit that is hard to accept, that comes out of nowhere, and integrate that with your highest self that knows what it wants, that has virtue and wants to be this enlightening being, you know, wants to be a light for the world. So that's where it really taught me. It taught me a lot about self-acceptance and integrating some of the shitty parts of myself with the higher parts to find who I really was and have balance and hold space for hard times and growth, but also seek something greater at all times.
One thing that I think I realized, my mom went full-fledged focus on my little brother from age 13 to 16, which I don't want her to do anything else. Obviously, she went and lived in a hospital, quit her job, just slept next to my brother, and I would go school, practice, take the light rail to the hospital till 10, or have one of my girl at the time, take me out there and then go home and sleep, and just repeat that every single day for my 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade year. And then when my little brother died, my mom had been out of kind of my life through that 3 years when I was growing. She wasn't really like house school. Like, she was like, house school, I'm like, good. You know, like, you're not around. Like, I'm going to go hang with my kids and, I mean, hang with my friends and hang out with their families and my coaches and all that. And I think going out and around other black dudes and them making fun of us having a white mom built animosity towards having a white mom. And so when we come back home, it's like, God, I got a fucking white mom. I want to be black because in school I'm treated black and my black people don't treat me black because my mom is white. So then it's like you blame your white mom. It's so fucked up. I think that's where a black dad would have came in and been like, motherfucker, you better be grateful. God dang it. Your mama is powerful, you know? So back to that parenting thing. But I mean, maybe you can attest, like dealing with people making fun of you, like we're saying, the white people liked you because you were athletic. The black people didn't like you because you was light skinned. You can get sunburnt and fucking, you can pass as black, white or white pass or whatever. You know, you're kind of in that gray area, and sports was the one that I was really like, well, fuck all y'all, I'm going to practice. And people were like, oh, he's good at sports, like leave him alone kind of thing. But it still was like, you want to put that blame somewhere because of your environment. And that's the importance of finding out what school and who's around your kids too, for sure. Because they'll bring that animosity back home to you if you put them around the wrong people.
Truth, man. It's one thing where we as parents know is that you can't control what your kids are exposed to outside of the home. And so having some idea of what your community is like, what they're being exposed to, that's important. That's important. And that's, bro, what you said is hard, man, because mom's got it rough, man. You go outside of the house, you hear some bullshit, you bring it home to your mom. Your mom's like, what the hell? I've done everything for you, bro. And now you treat me like this. I'm your only mom. You know? Yo.
Sorry, ma. I love you. I'm so sorry. She gonna listen to this. I'm sorry for all that. Mom, what a dickhead. Thank you for doing everything. I made a song for her. Did y'all hear that?
You played it for me at the wedding.
That shit was banging.
That was a banger, bro.
Share a pivotal moment during sports and a moment after sports that shifted your mindset forever, during and after.
So, I reflecting on this question, it kind of brings up something that Alyssa brought up earlier and kind of gave a nugget to the crowd, was that don't ever let somebody throw you off your game by telling you what you should or shouldn't be doing or how to go about it. And I think freshman year football, bro, scout team player of the year, I'm killing, right? I'm thinking I'm on my way. Captain of the football team, center, I'm in his ass, kicking his ass all day at practice. And he's like, you know what? You just need to calm down. You're taking this too seriously. This is scout team practice. You don't need to be going so hard. I listened to this motherfucker. I listened to him, bro. I like was like, oh shit, he's right. What am I doing? And that was detrimental to my entire, to whatever I had going on. Cause I think luckily if I had a vision of, I want to play football, but I could have maybe had the vision turn into something greater had I not gone to sleep at that moment. I think I just took my hands off the wheel. I said, all right, we here, we coasting, we chilling, cruise control, instead of doing what I was done, which was just be this relentless asshole. And like, oh, you getting your ass whooped? Well, get better.
Yeah.
It's the mentality I should have had. But he was a senior. I'm a 17-year-old kid in this big school. I want to be liked. I don't want to burn bridges. And I let it, I won't say destroy me, maybe, but it changed my path significantly in a way that I wasn't aware of. And so that was kind of the moment early on in my athletic career that really changed things. And I think after the fact, you know, I tried to play again, right? I tried to play the semi-pro. I was playing with the Warriors. We actually won title the year I played. That's what happened to me. I was like linebacker calling the D and telling people where to line up. So I was pretty proud of myself. And I think what I realized then was like, look, yes, you love football. Yes, it's your dream. But it's time for you. You share this dream with other kids. Now that it's not time for you to be out here smacking heads anymore. And the moment, actually, I was down in Kansas City, bro. It was a draw play. This running back had to be. He was about the same size as Derrick Henry, probably a little faster. A little stronger than Derrick Henry. I'm making that. I'm trying to gas him the situation, right? Oh my God, I'm pouring some extra sugar.
Where he at now? Let's see.
Met him in the hole, man. And I hit my neck in a way where I wasn't right for like weeks after the fact. Like I just, it was so, like I still played the game, which was probably dumb because I probably could have lost I could have been paralyzed. After that, I just knew I was like something, I got to be done. It opened up to me that, bro, your validation doesn't come from this anymore. Football isn't where your purpose is going to bring you somewhere. Like, all you're going to do is end up hurt and can't go to work on Monday.
No money.
I learned that, okay, it's time to, man up. And if you're going to move needles in your life or train for something, make it be for something valuable, whether it's getting a house for you and your family or starting a company or changing education forever with a product. Those are kind of what I'm doing now. I'm trying to be a husband, a father. I'm trying to change education right now and bring individualized educational plans to everyone who wants to grow their academic career or life. I think that those were kind of the things that woke me up and experiences that I'll never forget that were pivotal to me.
That shit happened to me at NDSU except I did the other thing. I said, fuck all y'all. I ain't picking up no balls. I'm not picking up your tray. Y'all can't guard me. Fuck y'all. And then they ended up punching me one by one in the weight room. And I ended up leaving. I got into like 5 fights in the locker room, weight room, practice. And I was like, I just left one day. I couldn't handle it, but I never was like, I'm gonna let off the gas. I was like, I'm gonna fuck y'all up this practice now, motherfuckers. People were like, man, chill. You a rookie. Chill. I'm like, I don't give a fuck. I'm about to start this year. Rookie that, motherfucker. They did not like that. Like you said, like you didn't want to ruffle feathers. I ruffled feathers. I couldn't take it though. So I ended up leaving. Even the coaches were like, man, chill. I'm like, what? Chill. Don't you want me to fucking bring competition? It comes back to having a male role model that I could have called. And, you know, had checked my ego and be like, yo, you need to get into the system and like calm down your mouth, but still play hard kind of thing. Right. You know?
Maybe we should have been there for each other. Cause I know
where were we?
We was in the same separate ways.
We was in the same conference and never even talked.
Isn't that crazy, bro?
Man, same division, same. We're supposed to play each other 4 times.
Played each other and like, I just go straight to the locker room after the game. I didn't come look for you or nothing or shake hands. I was like, he all right. He probably in the locker room too. He might not even make the trip. I don't know.
Didn't even make it, man. That's crazy, man. But gotta love sports. Hey, enroll your kids in sports. I think that's one of the best things you can do, especially if you're a single parent,
bro.
Damn, they about to bring soccer over here. That's what they said.
Sebastian's in soccer.
I was in soccer for 6 years until one.
That's why you and Cole athlete had great footwork. So transition your kids once they're physical enough in like 8th, 9th grade to a physical sport because kids need physicality,
competition, and loss, adversity, teamwork.
I'm scared. He's just gonna get hurt.
Damn, no, life gonna fuck him up worse if you don't put him
right,
through something.
Right. Get him used to it. Get him resilient. Concussion never hurt nobody.
Two,
you gotta worry about two. Second one, that's
we just
bad.
Interviewed a guy who got paralyzed from play wrestling.
Oh, really?
Man, dude was wrestling as many times as we done wrestled. No, many times you done wrestled, but as many times as you done wrestled, he was just in a headlock with his friend and tried to pull his head out, neck down, paralyzed. And it's with his friends, with his boys. Gone. 10 years later, and now he's still trying to learn how to walk. Got kids and shit, can't do laundry. Well, just started doing laundry.
That shit. I'm like, you're gonna play piano and be a poet.
That's what my mom was like. You end up being a girl. Nah, bro, you're not playing contact sports. You're my baby. You can't get hurt. But my cousin was like, you're gonna raise a little pussy? And my basically came into my life was like, no, I can't let you. You see how big he is? We're not gonna raise some big 6 foot dude doing ballerina tricks on a dance class. We need to turn him into a man.
No,
Smash will have his moment. There'll be somebody that'll convince him he needs to maybe get into boxing or doing something physical. Every man needs a physical outlet.
I like boxing.
Yeah, you do. Because otherwise that masculine gonna come out at the wrong time. You're gonna end up hitting your girl.
In negative ways. In negative
ways. And he's
gonna
be like,
come out.
He's gonna be like 6 feet too. Or more. We're going to wrap it up here. Do we have a couple more minutes? Last one. What is the greatest advice you've ever received? And would you change anything from your past?
That's like a great question in life because within my current mind, not like being tapped in, there's a lot of things I think I would change. I would do this differently. I would do that differently. But I think when you finally settle into a higher mind, everything happened for the reason that it happened. And now you're here and you are exactly where you're supposed to be.
Exactly.
Right here, you are exactly where you're supposed to be. It took me a long time to realize that this thing is the journey, and it's the moments in the journey that are rich, that are valuable, that are heavy, that are full of life and experience. The chase to the destination, now it's a good idea to begin with the end in mind, but if you're so caught up and stressed out about the end game, it can really cause you to lose sight of the process and the process mm-hmm. where the life and growth are. In the midst of that, don't take yourself too seriously. Don't be attached to these things. I know, like, do you guys ever feel like sometimes thoughts come into your mind that are like, hold on. I got to separate myself from this a little bit because this is
weird.
I think that in life, it's easy to feel that those thoughts come on and then let them and give them weight, give them space. And so my best advice would probably don't give the bullshit. Even if it comes into your mind, you don't have to attach yourself to it. You can let it pass just like the clouds going through the sky and move on to the next one. Life's a journey. While you're in that journey on your way to the destination, don't hold on to the rain clouds. Just let those ones move on. But the ones that are worth looking up with plenty of color, plenty of hue, saturation that show beautiful sunlights, take those in as long as you can and keep on trucking.
Hey, the journey is subjective. The destiny is objective. The emotions gonna come like the clouds. Mm-hmm. They're gonna pass and go, but the clouds provide shade in the rain. So have fun and have faith. Choose yourself.
Yeah, not at all.
I always say that your mind is like the sky and the thoughts are the clouds, good and bad. Okay, this was a great conversation. Thank you so much for coming on. Thanks. And as always, if you're listening to this episode, please give us a review, share it to your socials, tag us at Choose Yourself Show on Instagram. Yeah, we appreciate you so much.
Thank you.
Stay focused, y'all.